This panel is the future of audio, a broad topic for sure, and one that could go in many directions, and I think it probably will go in many directions. In the first panel today, all right, how's that better? In the first panel today, Tony Morey said, and I jotted this down, nobody knows where this industry is going, and that's certainly true. At times, it seems like we've attained the future with all the changes that have happened in the last 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and so on. But even as the future is attained, it seems to recede ahead of us so that there's always a new future and change is still afoot in a big way. And we get glimpses of the future by looking at trends in the industry that are the important trends that are in motion today. So that's a lot of what we'll be doing. We'll probably be talking about cars and about mobile and the migration of listening and programming and what radio means that it didn't used to mean and what ownership of music means that it didn't used to mean. Let's introduce the people who will actually be doing the talking. At the far end, Michael Hill, the managing director of Radio Player. Scott Lyons is sitting next to him. He's the business development head of connected services for Ford, the automaker. Matt Deegan, sitting in the middle, the creative director of Folder Media. Miles, hello, Miles Palmer here. He's the founder of Eventbrite and also does business development for new partnerships for TuneIn across Europe, Asia, and Africa. And closest to me is Simon Cole, the CEO of 7 Digital. Thank you, each of you, for being here today. Michael, I'm going to inflict the first question on you, if that's all right. Radio Player straddles so many fences, has a huge audience, broadcast radio, streaming, mobile, cars. It seems to have a foot in so many aspects of the industry. So from your perspective, what disruptive trends are most importantly in motion today?
Thanks for that. I knew I was going to get the first question. So I thought of three C's: cash, cars, and craft. So in that order, a quick thought on each of them. I don't know if anyone's read the great blog post from John Myers recently on the race to the bottom in terms of cost per thousand on linear radio, spot load in commercial radio. That is a big thing we need to talk about here, the commercial model for radio, particularly linear radio. And with the entrance of, say, AdSwizz, Triton, the new digital audio exchange from Global, 10 new commercial radio stations launching in the next year or so in the UK, what's their business model going to be? And the BBC charter up for renewal as well, they're not immune to talk of cash either. So cash is a topic we should talk about, I think, making it, losing it, how it affects your radio output. The next C is cars for me, which is something that Radio Player is focusing on hugely at the moment. Depending on where you live in the world, of course, 20 to 40% of your radio listening is done in cars. The car firms are like a supertanker. They take many years to change course. But once the bow is turning, it's inexorable. So, you know, Apple's in this space, Google's in this space, Ford Sync is in this space, Mirrorlink is in this space. The big thing we're thinking about at Radio Player is hybrid radio in cars. Radios that are able to switch automatically between streaming, DAB, HD in the States, or FM. That is a trend that I want to talk about as well. Single station list, single preset list, automatically finding your content. And the third thing is craft. Now, I was going to make my third C content, but content's boring. It's just stuff. Without craft, content is not radio. It's Will Page's comment earlier about quality versus quantity. And it's also Tony Morey from Absolute talked about this as well. What do you do to the content? In a world of infinite free content, craft is what's going to help you survive. In audio terms, it could be how tight your presenters are on the Fun Kids or how memorable your imaging is. But it could also be an elegant recommendation algorithm in a Spotify app or a brilliant piece of UX in Ford Sync. Craft. What are you adding to your content? Because that's what's going to save you ultimately.
Good. A lot to dig into there. I'm bookmarking each of them, and I hope we can go down all three paths, but not at the same time. So first of all, let's dig into the cars a little bit, and we'll just shift down one space in the panel lineup to Scott. You're obviously all about cars, digital dashboards, connected cars. And in fact, the connected car has really become a buzzword in the industry and somewhat in the consumer realm as well. I want to ask you, do consumers know what that means? And another way of putting that is, what is the demand that actually exists in car lots when people are shopping? Many people are buying a new car after having the old one for 10 years. What is their perception of what they can get? What do they want to get? What's driving progress here? Are consumers really, well, I'm asking this in 10 different ways. Are consumers expressing demand that you recognize in your work?
Well, there are a couple of questions there, right?
Okay.
So the connected car, obviously the connected car has been around for quite some time, of course, with radio, right? So it's not a new concept, but I think the buzzword is certainly out there. It's one of those it's one of those kind of catchphrases that is somewhat exhausting because it's so hyped up at the moment that no one really knows what the connected car is. And so obviously from a Ford perspective, we've decided to really focus on bringing in and allowing customers to bring in their own connectivity through their smartphone and also access to their own applications and allowing that to connect to their vehicle as opposed to having an embedded solution, which of course, as you rightly point out, takes quite some time for evolution to move forward. For example, we are still using in some of our vehicles technology that is probably around 10 years old, right? So as you can imagine, from the connected services perspective, which is where I'm working in, that is very challenging because if you're working with 10-year-old technology in your car and you want people to access some new content or some new ways of accessing and actually doing it in a very safe way, it's very, very challenging. In terms of what do customers want, I don't think they know what they want. We have to somehow deliver it to them and see if they're interested in that. We obviously have some help coming from Apple and Google, from CarPlay and from Android Auto are coming in. We, as Ford, have publicly announced that we're supporting that. Our strategy is to basically offer three different solutions in our vehicle. If you have an Android device, you clearly can use Android Auto. If you have an iOS device, CarPlay, of course. Or if you don't want to use those, you are basically allowed to use AppLink. We believe that those different technologies offer different things. Obviously, from our perspective, as the automotive manufacturer, we can, of course, deliver different experiences, vehicle data, a whole range of things that certain developers may want access to. But the challenging thing that we face at the moment is around customer awareness of what they can actually do in the vehicle. So my big issue at the moment with a company that's 120,000 people, as you can imagine, somewhat challenging, is the dealer perspective, meaning you walk into a dealership, you know, what's the handover process? You've just bought a new Fiesta, and hey, here's the warranty and everything else. Most people actually leave the dealership without actually having their phone synced up. How do you use it? All of those types of things. So it's certainly one of the things that I'm really focused on to try and make sure that customers are properly educated about what they have in their vehicle, because we are still seeing very low usage rates of this technology that's in the vehicle. However, once people start to understand what's possible, they really embrace it. So, you know, we need to do a much better job of doing that. I think certainly Apple and Google coming into this space will probably help.
Say low usage rates. That means that new buyers drive their cars off the lot, and then in some way you track whether or not they use the digital listening alternatives that are available, and they don't?
So we have, so we don't track customers in terms of what they're doing, right? What we do is with specifically to AppLink, which is basically mm-hmm. part of Sync, right?
Yes.
So Sync has been available now for quite a number of years. We've added a new feature, which is AppLink, which basically is working with you guys, have integrated our API, which has been open source, into the Radio Player app, and now people can actually have access to that app and voice control it through the vehicle and have it actually play through the infotainment system. What we're seeing is that we can track when a connection happens.
Sure.
Meaning we don't know what they're doing,
yep.
but we know that the app has tried to connect to yep. Sync, And we can see that in terms of what's most popular and what's not being accessed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ultimately, the content owners like Radio Player or Spotify, which is another partner of ours, or others will obviously have access to that data because ultimately the app lives on the phone. There is absolutely zero transfer of any of the app itself into the vehicle, right? It's just literally a Bluetooth connection or a hard USB connection when it's down to Apple or an iOS device.
Mm-hmm. All right, so connected cars, obviously an important part of the future, although a somewhat undefined one and still a long road to drive down, if you will, before awareness is way up there and usage as well. Miles, I want to ask you something, because when we talked a week or two ago, you had an interesting perspective on car listening, which is an aspect of mobile, and other types of mobile listening versus in-home listening. Could you talk a bit about what you told me about the rise of in-home listening and how that's happening?
Sure. I mean, I think actually it's also following on from the Spotify stuff that we heard recently, last session. The reality, TuneIn has got a huge broadband of devices that it's connecting to. And I think the reality here, which may burst a few people's bubbles, is that in-home is probably the most important thing for recall for radio. And we are seeing huge explosion of connected devices in-home. The transformation of radio listening in-home to streaming radio in-home. And I think the industry needs to wake up to this fact big time, because no longer is there a nice box sitting there just piling out radio. And we're seeing huge, huge shift in this, to the extent that for something like, for an application like TuneIn, we're seeing more people connecting via in-home devices for longer than mobile devices in certain territories. Those tend to be pretty affluent territories, pretty design-savvy territories. But, there's a huge thing happening on connected devices. And if we miss that by constantly focusing on mobile, which is obviously important, I think we do that at our peril. And, basically I've been in the radio business, as you can tell from the haircut, for a little while, selling kind of news and that sort of syndicated content, sport. And I spent a bit in .com in 2000 in the search business, and we were kind of pushing ads and search and all the rest of it, and then Google came along. And what Google did brilliantly was give every user, the whole world, when they wanted it, quickly, simply. And if we miss this kind of point of people, the UK or this market or that market, it's too small. If I'm a jazz listener in Paris, I might be TSF Jazz, might be my station. But I might want to listen to Jazz FM. I might want to listen to a station in New Orleans. And that's really the world that we live in. It's about great content getting to anybody.
Yeah, thank you. We've already, just in this short time, we've talked about many different platforms. Cars as a certain platform, which itself might be divided into micro-platforms of Google and Android and proprietary automaker platforms, and in-home devices, wireless speakers as a general platform, and then different brands of them. And where I'm going with this is that it seems that audio has splintered into so many choices for users, which is wonderfully empowering for users, but also could be confusing and frustrating. And Miles, with all these products and choices and platforms and the confusion that can result, is there any solution that can simplify the choices that consumers have in the future? Or will it continue to get more complex? What's the ideal solution? Could you fix this for us, please, Simon?
Sorry, was that to me?
Oh, did I say Miles?
I meant to ask Simon. I'm sorry.
Well, that was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a curveball. The answer, of course, is yes. I'm very struck by what Miles just said, because it is entirely our experience. One of the reasons we put what was a radio company, UBC, together with 7 Digital is because we believe that the world of the future is about listening to audio, whether it's streamed music, curated content, radio stations online, radio stations broadcast. And one of the most compelling statistics is that if you look at the world's consumption of music 10 years ago, and I mean consumption of music including listening to the radio, because after all, that was how the vast majority of people, and still is, consume music. And you look at the digital audience. The digital audience today, which everybody goes on about, is tiny, still less than 20% of people's consumption of music, and entirely about mobile, tablets, and PCs. The real opportunity is the places that people are going to listen to digital music and digital audio in the future. And the in-home opportunity is enormous. And it's an enormous opportunity both for the radio industry to drop a ball or catch a ball. And I agree entirely with Mark. I also think, though, that the car is really important. And my answer to your question would go to Mike's fourth C, which is craft. The most important craft is providing listeners with ease of access. We call it the entertainment button. I'm a fan of Spotify. I've been a user since virtually day one. I was lucky enough to meet Daniel, you know, very soon after they started, and thought it was fantastic. But the future of listening to music is not about paying $9.99 a month and creating playlists and trawling through 29 million songs and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. For most people, consumption is about hitting a button and getting something they expect and enjoy. Concentrating on how you do that in digital is the key thing. And the customers we see who are succeeding are customers who are providing that in an environment. And in-home is one of the most important environments for that. Because if you buy, and we're working with Onkyo and a couple of other Japanese manufacturers who I can't name yet, on wireless speaker solutions for the home. Well, if I buy a wireless speaker and I take it out of the box and I switch it on, I don't want to start selecting from 29 million songs and building a playlist. I just want to hit a button and get the music that I want. And I want to select from jazz, rock, pop, whatever. And I might want a radio station, but I might want a streamed music service. I just want to be entertained. The craft is the radio industry's number one asset in this market. And, you know, I speak as somebody who in the last 6 months has begun to meet a lot of people in the digital music industry. Most of them would die to have the talent that every program director has in that finger. Because what they want to do is to be able to provide people with the entertainment button. But they're not sure how to find out what those people like, how to make a judgment about them, how to make it easy. Those are the things that radio stations have done for years and years and years. And you keep seeing models in digital music where old radio models are being invented. I mean, we're now talking about a revolutionary concept where you would take advertising and you would contextualize it to the music that people are streaming. Oh my God. So music related to advertising. Well, that would be like advertising female products on Magic FM or advertising Budweiser on Rock FM. It's just the way the radio industry's already done it. And these craft skills are absolutely vital. What we're about as a company is trying to apply some of those craft skills from our radio heritage into this new world. And I think it is a very exciting time in places like the car and in home for radio to do some things in guiding people and in providing curated services, mm-hmm. which is going to be entirely necessary for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hear what you're saying about most listeners really just wanting a simple start to the listening experience. A big play button, you press it, and you get something that you want or expect or like. How does that jive with what I hear over and over again of a strategy of ubiquity? You have to be on all platforms. You really almost have to fragment your own product. I guess what I'm asking is, where does this button live? Does it live in the car? Does it live in the home? How is it a universal button?
The button... Let's not think of the button as an electronic thing. Oh, the button yeah. could be a terrific radio presenter. The button, well, take an example. You know, one of our production companies produces Pick of the Pops, which is one of Radio 2's foremost oldest services in the UK, Saturday lunchtime, 3 million listeners, presented by Tony Blackburn. If I'm a consumer in the UK and you give me a button that says oldies that has Tony Blackburn's name on it, I'll push it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what device mm-hmm. I'm on. That he is the entertainment button for somebody in that category. Now, you mentioned, you know, jazz stations. There are, you know, there's Jazz FM, there's a couple of other world-leading brands. If I'm into jazz, I trust that brand. So many of those trusted brands are either radio station brands or presenter brands. You know, there are other people coming into this market, and we recently announced a deal with Will.i.am to provide, you know, a music service on his new wearable. Now, he's trying to become like an entertainment brand because, you know, people believe that actually if there are curated services on there and his name's attached to them, well, actually, there's certain types of music that I trust him for. And there will be other people coming into this game as trusted sources. So I'm not saying the entertainment button is a piece of software. I'm saying it's a concept. It's something that you are offering consumers to make it easy for them to access music and, to that extent, speech content as well. You know, there are plenty of curators in sports and in news. The BBC is a fantastic example of a news curator. Anywhere you go in the world, if you have a news service and you have four services and one of them's got the BBC name on, that's the one, sorry CNN, but that's the one most people are going to push.
So thriving in the future is not necessarily about the radio brand, which might be subordinate to a personality or some kind of programming. I see that.
And that's a very interesting point. What you're seeing going on in some of the most visionary radio companies, you know, Global Radio here in the UK, I was nearly going to call them Clear Channel, iHeartMedia in the States, is the creation of bigger brands. So, you know, Global took 28 FM radio stations and called them either Heart or Capital. So what they're doing is they're bigging up the brand to create something that they can empower.
Okay, Matt, I wanted to ask you, you've got an entrepreneur's vision about the future. And how is it easier now than ever before to launch a new audio publishing venture, a pure play or something like that? Well, why is it easier?
I mean, the thing to think about radio and a lot of radio's history is the fact that it's sat on congested spectrum. You know, there are large barriers to entry if you wanted to come and radio. They would come and run a radio station. You needed a frequency. You needed the government or a body like it to give you that license. Now, whether those radio stations were any good or not, whether they were catering for the tastes and interests of listeners, was kind of irrelevant. If you had the license, you got to decide. And then the shift has kind of came from the 80s into the 90s was that consumers particularly were going, well, I'm not really sure I want to follow someone else's vision for what I want to consume. Rise of the internet, rise of multi-channel TV, internet on mobile as well. Suddenly choice, there's been an explosion of choice. Suddenly having that congested spectrum, having that frequency becomes less important as people seek different things out. I think one of the reasons in UK radio that our reach has stayed pretty high at 90% compared to some other territories is we've had a kind of evolution of platforms. So broadcast FM radio, broadcast DAB radio, which has a 25% share of all radio listening. Now, that's a platform. If you weren't that happy with your FM license, your FM, what you could pick up, but you want to listen to 6 Music or Absolute 80s, there was a device which you're very comfortable with, a radio, that you could listen to that from. And then the evolution for that into internet and mobile. I think craft is there, but I think the other side is marketing, how you can communicate the fact, you know, on a tune-in list of 10,000 radio stations, what is your station, what does it do, why should someone press that button to tune into it? And I think that's, again, the great opportunity is suddenly you can reach this large audience, but the difficulty now isn't that you need to get an FM license, it's how can you get people's awareness, how can you get people's attention? And I think that's a much better place to be than having to buy up or win a license. Mm-hmm. What you see from existing media operators, particularly in the UK, is they've used their strong awareness to grow new radio stations. And so Absolute Radio launching a raft of spin-off services like Absolute 80s, which has over a million listeners, nearly 1.5 million listeners. BBC using the cross-promotional power of the BBC radio and TV networks to launch 6 Music, nearly 2 million listeners, one extra Asian network across the UK. The new entrants, it's, I think, about finding the right platforms and combining that with the craft and skill to be able to cut through. For digital radio, which is for DAB digital radio, which like a curated selection of radio stations, people like Planet Rock have managed to achieve that. We run a children's radio station called Fun Kids, which is on digital radio, on internet and mobile. And we're lucky because it's a format gap. You know, there isn't any other kids' radio in the UK, so we have to teach people it exists. So if we can teach people it exists, they will find us because we're really the only one. But actually, for Fun Kids, being a radio station on its own, without being part of a big radio group connected to infrastructure and distribution and marketing and sales, you have to do things in a slightly different way. And you kind of see this in lots of territories where new content has popped up. So our broadcast radio station does well, but our website generates a significant amount of revenue for that as a business. You know, it exists as YouTube videos, it exists as mobile, it exists as a parents' newsletter. And all those things have to reinforce each other. Mm. You know, just having a radio station as a new entrant would not be enough. For existing, particularly analog broadcasters, who have a huge amount of heritage, you know about Capital FM or you know about Classic FM, the momentum of those brands can carry them to pretty much stick around in one format, you know, a broadcast radio format. Whereas for anybody new coming into it, they need a much broader play. Mm. Now, I think the older broadcasters will have to adapt and move into that space as well. And you can look at Capital, which has a TV channel, big live events business now, off that main brand. Same for new entrants. How do you kind of really push the kind of mind share for people to know what you do, maybe discover it through the web and then sample your radio station or stumble across your YouTube videos? Mm-hmm. So the opportunities suddenly are there to build these new content businesses.
I'd like to talk about digital natives. And this takes off from the youth discussion in this morning's panel, but goes back even a little farther, a little younger. Digital natives are the population of people who have never known an unconnected world. They barely know what a non-touch sensitive screen is, and as opposed to all of us here who are digital immigrants. I mean, even if we immigrated a long time ago. And so digital natives characteristically don't pay for music, won't pay for music. They turn to YouTube for content as an extraordinarily influential music delivery platform. They are possibly less exposed to radio, depending on environmental circumstances. And as they grow older, of course, the demographic enlarges. So the question, and I'll throw this to whoever wants to speak up first in the panel, how can audio publishers capture the attention and the engagement and loyalty of these digital natives?
I mean, just on, probably just pick up on Fun Kids and just talking about that. It's a radio station that targets 6 to 11-year-olds. It's really easy to say, oh, kids don't listen to the radio. It's like, well, they listen to the radio if there's something on the radio for them, like they watch television if there's something on TV for them. And I think that's the bit that sometimes we skip across. You know, we fret and worry about teenagers or how they're not consuming radio or playing for music. It's like, well, they will if you give them the right opportunities to do that. And we know from our audience, you know, they're more than happy to listen to the radio. They might listen to it in a different way. So there's a very popular kids game called Bin Weevils. Over a million kids use it each week. And we have a Bin Weevils show on Fun Kids. Now, if you go into the Bin Weevils world, you can pop our player. And we were very excited when we did this deal to basically use their free marketing to reach more children. What we were quite surprised by is how they used it. So together, chatting, they decided that they would all listen to the radio station together in the shopping mall area of this game. So we thought, oh, that's a surprise. So we obviously went into the shopping mall. We're watching along as the radio show plays. And then they all started singing the lyrics to the songs by typing it in. And so these are kids on laptops spread across the country singing along to Little Mix, saying salute, typing in salute. And you watch all these weevils, these like ant-like characters all singing salute at each other. And you realise, well, this is a traditional radio thing. This is social proof. This is water cooler moments. They've just found their other way to do it, and they're doing it in a virtual game. If you provide the right content, you'll absolutely reach them.
Yeah, Michael, what
I took a quick focus group with my teenage kids last night before coming here. Uh-huh. And
how old are your kids?
Daughter's 17, and I said, talk to me about the radio. She said, play shit music. So I said, well, how come...
Did you have a checkbox for that, by the way?
So I said, well, how come when I left the house yesterday morning, the radio in the kitchen's on Radio 4? She's at home at the moment. She's a university student. She's on a break. And when I got back in the evening, it was on Radio 1. She said, oh, yeah, I've changed it. So I said, how long are you listening for? She said, I was on for about 3 hours. But apparently, she plays shit music. So, you know, I think we have to take with a pinch of salt what teenagers tell us and what they do.
Yeah. Simon, what's on your mind?
I think, my experience of digital natives is two teenage boys in my house, 17 and 14. So I know how digital natives work. And, I'm not saying what I'm going to say because I'm some old-fashioned radio guy who's hanging on to the past. But I think we can get tied up in what 17-year-olds do now when they've got lots of time and somebody else paying the bill compared with what those people will do when they become 24, 25, 40. And that's what we really need to be asked. And I agree with what Mike said, but I specifically want to challenge something you just said, which is said quite often in this world, which is that this generation will not pay for music. Okay, so the corollary of that is that our generation did pay for music, right? The average Brit, and Britain has the highest spend on music per capita in the world and has had for 30 years, the average Brit spends less than £25 a year on music. But they consume hours and hours and hours of music. So do we call the BBC free music? When I listened to Radio 1 as a child, was I listening to free music? Well, actually, my parents were paying a license fee. And if you took the BBC's license fee and divided it pro rata by the budget that the BBC spends on its music service, and I know this is a somewhat facetious exercise, but follow me with it. If you do that math, the BBC becomes the richest music subscription service in the world. And we are paying that money. I mean, that's not happening. Everybody's paying a license fee. The models we're seeing that are clever about the future, like we're powering a service called Rock Mobile in the States, where the music comes free with a SIM card. Well, of course, it isn't free. It's built in the cost of the SIM card. But because the SIM card comes with all-you-can-eat data, all-you-can-eat music, all-you-can-eat text, and a music service, and because the rate of that SIM card is lower than the equivalent tariff from AT&T, that's a clever business model, because in the shops, the teenager thinks, great, I'm getting a free music service. Well, they're not, no more than if they're listening to the radio and people are playing commercials at them, they're getting a free music service. They're just getting a music service with a different economic model. And we're judging this, we're judging the ability of the digital generation to pay for music against some very, very basic business models. You know, again, the Spotify business model of $9.99 a month for music, the iTunes model of, 99p, $1.29 for a song, those are really at the raw end of people paying for music. And it comes back to the point we were making earlier about the connected home. The real thing to concentrate on is where this market's going for the 70% of people to be engaged. What are the economic models? What are the technical models? What are the curation models? That's the massive opportunity. And I think that when my teenagers grow up, they'll be paying for music. I don't think they'll be getting me to pay $9.99 a month to Spotify, because I'm going to stop that when they go to university. And they'll probably stop their Spotify account, but will they have the ad-free, ad-supported service? Maybe. They'll make their own decisions. But by then, I think, in 2 or 3 years, they'll have music services where they're paying 99p a month for just the music they want. They might do that. Mm-hmm. They certainly do it if it's embedded in the cost of something else.
Fundamentally, it's all about price point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just get the price point right, and people will take the content if it's good enough.
And the way you charge them, clever economic models are what the future is about. And we see an enormous number of really clever economic models, coming in the sales pipeline. I think the way people consume digital music and get it paid for in 3 years' time, we will look back on the past 5 years as being really primitive in terms of the economic models.
Mm-hmm. Our countdown clock has started, so I want to move to the last question, which I would like to run down the whole line with. And it's the question about key takeaways, or in the context of a panel about the future, maybe we should call it carry forwards. But for audio publishers who are trying to figure out the future and position themselves, could each of you describe one key thought to take into their businesses which will help them be prepared for this semi-unknown future that we're facing? Starting with you, Michael.
Okay, so I talked about hybrid earlier in the concept in the context of broadcast plus IP. I'd like to talk about hybrid in a different context, which is linear crafted audio and on-demand audio service. Mm-hmm. At the moment, there's quite a lot of blue water between the two, mm-hmm. Spotify and a radio station, for example. I would say there's some magic in the middle, and no one's really cracked that yet. Mm-hmm. So either it's an on-demand audio service that becomes more like the craft of linear radio, or it's a linear radio service that allows some personalization and tangential music discovery journeys mm-hmm. before coming back. But there's something in the middle there.
Mm-hmm. Is that a price point issue? In the States, there are also legal, music licensing issues that prevent that kind of middle ground.
You're right, there is a grey area there around licensing. Once you're not simul streaming broadcast content, mm-hmm. neither are you totally streaming music pure play. Yeah. There's something in the middle which would probably blow up the computers at the licensing company. yeah, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
The record industry has to recognize.
Mm-hmm. Scott?
Right, well, obviously, I'm not being a content owner, of course, yes. Which is slightly different on this on the panel, but I would certainly say that from my perspective, being a music lover, and obviously with the other hat of being from an automotive manufacturer, my goal is every day to go out and meet with new partners, look for new. Music is one of the experiences that I really focus on because it really works in a car, as opposed to perhaps I want to search for a hotel near me, which perhaps may not work. Who knows? But I want to go out and find those new niche players, right? And I think what we as Ford can do can help deliver them to a market that they may not be hitting, right? Mm-hmm. We speak to a market that they may not speak to, right? So it's about awareness and a collaboration. So I think that's one of the reasons why I really love what I do, is because I can work with startups. If we had a different solution, I would never be able to consider working with a startup. So working with a guy in his garage who has a phenomenal music application and he's delivering something really interesting and of course it's licensed and it's properly done, we can do that. So I think that's where I'm slight different mm-hmm. Kind of response to your question, but yeah, I think that's where I'm kind of summing up, at least where I would like to go.
Thank you. By the way, cue up your questions in your minds because we will have time for audience questions. Matt, bring your entrepreneurial vision to bear.
Well, I think, to be honest, platforms are easy. Mm-hmm. There are lots of them. You just have to go through them all and do the deal for each one or what you think is necessary. Content's fun. It's always great making things. A room full of people who've got great skills to put something together, that's really fun. The hard bit is marketing and awareness. For new entrants particularly, how you can get people's attention in such a busy multimedia world, that's the difficult bit. And how can you use relationships, how can you use the value of the platforms, the value of your content, and also money, how can you have the right amount of money to throw out marketing to generate that awareness? Because if you haven't got any awareness, haven't got any consumers, well, there's no point in doing the other things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Miles, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think it's quite simple. Sign up with TuneIn, get your distribution sorted, and then focus on the content. Radio or audio is the most personal of content. Everybody's got their own image in their own head. It's very personal. So you've got to get into your direct marketing, you've got to know all of your consumers individually, your listeners, individually, and speak to them individually. Guys have done this on the mic forever. Where's the rest of it? You've got to know, you've got to be speaking to them in all sorts of different ways, communicating to them, alerting them to new content coming up. All of the sorts of things that we do. That's the important stuff. Don't worry about distribution, that's simple.
Thanks, Miles. Simon, I don't think you'll be at a loss for words.
Which means I did too long an answer.
Mike
stole mine, actually, because I think that middle space is absolutely the thing. So I'll steal one of his go up to, if you like, the helicopter view. It's absolutely not about platforms. It's not about technology. It's about the skill set that you have and where it fits in this new world. So the most difficult thing is to step back from the current business model, whether you're a streaming music service or a radio station, to step back from what you do, identify what the huge market is that's coming, and then identify the single skill, one skill, that you have to employ in that market that nobody else has. Mm-hmm. And identify that skill and follow that through, because that's what's going to be your value in this new world. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And now, questions from the audience, please.
Two questions.
Kurt, two questions is what we're being directed to offer. There's one. Tom?
Thanks. I appreciated Matt's comment that the history of audio had the great Ofcom gatekeeper who, once you gained that approval, then all the spoils of radio and everything came to you seemingly without question. Is the future of audio, or perhaps the present of audio, a situation where the gatekeeper is now the music companies? And if that's the case, are you happy with that trade?
The music companies have always been an issue for radio broadcasters. When the Radio Centre, which is the commercial radio trade body, was doing some the recent negotiations with PRS and PPL, was looking through some of the paperwork and looking at the last row that they had in the 70s about it, and it going to tribunal, it's been a problem there's always been. I think, oddly, music companies are more responsive to different models. Their price points may be higher than we would like. But also they know that radio, traditionally radio, has been a pretty good payer. You know, we've got a lot of percentage of revenue deals that have always been here in the UK. And that bodes pretty well. And the deal that broadcast radio has at the moment is amazing, in the fact that you pay a percentage of revenue and you get internet streaming included as standard, which puts broadcast radio in a great position to build new businesses. Mm-hmm.
All right. There's another question in the back. This will be our final question.
Good afternoon. A question for Scott mainly, please. Have you done any research that identifies other type of audio content that people want to consume in the car? So audiobooks, comedy, food programs. And can you give us an example of some of the other partnerships that you're driving across at Ford?
Sure. So in terms of other audio content, audiobooks certainly is one of them. So we've launched with a company called Audioteca, which have a lot of different content you can basically buy on demand, and you can access that content. We've also actually launched with Penguin, in fact. So they own the rights to Roald Dahl. They haven't licensed that out. We made an announcement that you would be able to access the Roald Dahl, all of his books, in fact, in the vehicle by simply just pressing the button on your steering wheel and saying Roald Dahl, of course, if your phone is connected. So, you know, we do also have other types of applications that are in the vehicle. So we've announced TomTom, so in effect you'll be able to naturally press the button on your steering wheel, say TomTom, and say navigate me to so-and-so's house, and it will do it. The ultimate goal here, of course, is to try and deliver experiences that people traditionally try and use in the vehicle while they're driving, and try to get them to actually use it in a really safe way. So we do have about 60 different applications available, a majority of them being in the U.S., because the U.S. actually has been around for much longer in terms of AppLink. I'm actually based in Europe. I'm based in Berlin, and so I'm responsible for all of Europe. So we're starting to build that base of developers here. In fact, funnily enough, in the U.S., a majority of our apps actually are individual radio stations that have decided to make their app available in the vehicle, so which I thought was quite interesting. You tap into one platform, you get 30 radio stations, great. But I prefer our approach here.
Yeah.
Far superior. But again, it's about discovery. So we're promoting these apps and we're trying to make people aware, obviously, that they can do this in the vehicle. But yeah, we cover a lot of categories. What's safe, the fundamental thing for us is about what's safe. So I do get a lot of people coming up to me and saying, hey, so can I have a new, you know, video application. I'd love to get in the car. And I'm thinking, well, would you really want someone to be watching a video while your son or daughter is crossing the street? And I think the answer is no. So I always have to check myself about a particular app to see, well, is this really applicable or not? We do also, I like to kind of explore a bit. Ford can be quite a big behemoth of a company that tries to stick down a certain line. I don't come from the automotive industry. I actually come from the mobile industry and before that, television. So I approach it from a very different perspective. And so I'm looking at trying to do deals where we're actually bundling certain concepts and applications and services with vehicles. So basically, you buy a vehicle and you can get certain things. We're looking at doing some of that now in some of our smaller markets as a trial. But yeah, open to ideas.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah. Please join me in thanking all of our panelists.